The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Tuesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we're going to review some bowl bounces to show you that fine line between a Shakespearean comedy and a tragedy. Several days after Bob Seger left town, we're still waiting on the Thunder, or at least one of them. And at tonight's College Hardwoods, we bring in one of our favorite notions. It's reputation versus reality time.
Well, Dave, busy weekend, tons of action. I know you've got a first take on Tuesday. Tell us what you saw that you want to discuss on air today.
Not what we want to discuss, but what we feel like we should. You know, so many times we talk about the color and the pageantry of sport and how that carries you through, even times when the results aren't the way that you want them to be. What a magnificent day the Bulls could have been yesterday, and that you had such wonderful endings in play. Georgia, Michigan State, Wisconsin, Oregon, the nightcap last night, Oklahoma State, Stanford. All terrific football games, all having their outcomes decided by just one key bounce at the right time. We love that. We love it when we see teams playing well. We love that drama. Except when you have one of those days where you're on the wrong side of the bounce in all three of those particular games. A couple of good plays that we didn't cash. Oklahoma State, we had the wrong side, but still came within a couple of inches of cashing it. And you have that moment, that flash moment at the end where you think you actually did get it there. So a day that we should have enjoyed much more than we did. We come back having been hit in the pocket, but as we start 2012, you can ride along with us now for the entire 12 months. And we'll show you how you keep your sanity about you during those times. Teddy, I know you weren't watching most of the early days yesterday. You were smart enough. Instead of watching the early games, you and Carol were out enjoying the beautiful sunshine. So did you bring the sunshine in here with you?
No, I got no sunshine. And the part of the reason that I needed to get out of the house yesterday, because frankly, I spent the previous 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, just getting my ass kicked. I mean, there's no sugarcoating it. I got my ass kicked.
I do have to ask now, was that by Kira or by the sports? Because it can happen both ways.
Yeah, mostly by the sports. You know, Kira had her moments. You know, I certainly wasn't a lot of fun to be around. But the bottom line was, it was a really rotten weekend. You know, and we could talk about the beats. It started with Baylor. We're not going to talk about Baylor, but it started with Baylor on Thursday. And then on Friday, we had Mississippi State's missed extra point. And then Saturday, the ending of the Northwestern game. And then Vandy, we had given up the big kick return touchdown to swing momentum. And then Sunday with the Niners. Oh, an onside kick? Sure, we'll give it up. Yeah, St. Louis can't score any touchdowns. They'll score two in 15 seconds to blow my cover. Yeah, that happened. What? We're not going to go with the bad beats. The bottom line is, how does a professional react when every break is going the wrong way, when he can't seem to find the right side? The only winner I had was Creighton, and Creighton, they were never in doubt. I mean, they were right side. Everything else, all the coin flip games, I had heads, they came up tails, vice versa. What do you do? Well, the first thing you do is you take a break, and that's what I did yesterday after I got up, got my work done. Yeah, let's take a break for a little while, honey. Let's go out and see some sunshine and enjoy some time with the boy. The second thing you do is you set your alarm even earlier for the next day. The alarm was set for 4:30 yesterday morning, a.m. Yeah, that's right. Because the bottom line is, your bankroll's hurting. Your clients aren't happy. You don't come back with winners. Guess what? You know, you're not say you're out of business after a bad weekend, but it's hard to bounce back from those things. So when you get slapped around, and it's going to happen inevitably, sometimes going to happen on big weekends, like a New Year's Bowl weekend. When that happens, take a breath. Calm down, relax for a little while, do something else for a little while, And then you get up the next day and you work even harder. And we were able to bounce back yesterday with a winning result, Dave. And had that extra half yard in the Okie State game come through, would have been a perfect day for myself and my clients. Unfortunately, we couldn't get one that we didn't deserve after losing all of those that we did. But the bottom line was, came back with a winning day, and I expect to do it again today. Let's shift over to Market Watch because there's a ton to talk about. And first, let me set the stage for what's going to happen this week in terms of previews and money times. For tonight, we're going to discuss the Sugar Bowl. Obviously, that's tonight. Tomorrow, the Orange Bowl between West Virginia and Clemson. We'll break that down tomorrow. On Thursday, we're going to talk about the Cotton Bowl, that Arkansas-Kansas State matchup. The GoDaddy.com Bowl goes on Friday. That's the SMU-Pitt matchup. And then next Monday, we're going to break down the national championship game, give you plenty of time to get your wagers down in advance of that contest. For the NFL, we're going to discuss the Saturday games on Thursday and the Sunday games on Friday. So once again this week, loaded with money times, loaded with game analysis. I know that's what you're looking for.
So the NFL regular season has now been put to bed. Boy, the numbers are fascinating as we break them down. Something we thought we'd never see in our lifetimes. The number one seed in the NFC, the number one seed in the AFC, both go to the worst defense in each conference. And right now, if you look at the future books, Green Bay and New England, favored to meet each other in the Super Bowl, you could have statistically the two worst defenses in the NFL going head-to-head. So got a couple of different things about this season that were totally unique. Six of the top 12 teams in total defense didn't make the playoffs. Seven of the top 12 in scoring defense didn't make the playoffs. That old notion, defense wins championships, maybe not in 2011. You want to run the ball to win? Three of the top five rushing teams didn't make the playoffs. Three of the bottom six rushing teams did make the playoffs. A most unusual season. A lot of topsy-turvy things happening for the usual logical progression of thought. A lot of that rules changes related. They took a lot of the oomph out of the defenses this year. But now here comes the question. It's playoff time starting on Saturday. If the regular season was so different, Teddy, do we start looking at the playoffs a little differently? I mean, there's a 59 total for a playoff game. In the past, we'd want to look under, but can we think that way anymore?
I'm not convinced that we can, particularly when we're talking about the highest total that either of us has ever seen in an NFL game, that being the Lions and Saints on Saturday night with that total that's been bet all the way up to 59. And again, the normal knee-jerk reaction, the professional bettors or the wise guys, oh, you got to take that under. I mean, you know, the final score goes 31-24. You don't cash an over ticket in that ballgame. 31-27, you don't cash an over ticket in that ballgame. 45-13, you don't cash your over ticket. I mean, there's certainly, however the game plays out, in the NFL, you don't see totals of 59. But in this instance, Dave, I'm in no rush to bet that under. I'm not going to bet it under. It's going to take probably a 65 in that game to get me to bet it under. Because we have so many things, a convergence of factors that have come together. We've seen the penalties that the NFL is calling in the modern era, really since over the last 2 years, where a defender, hey, you can't hit the quarterback low, you can't hit him high, you can't hit him with your shoulder, you can't hit him with your helmet. You see all kinds of penalties on defenses that you never saw before. You see the penalties downfield. The league has opened it up to make it a wide-open pass game. It's done intentionally. Higher-scoring games have higher ratings than lower-scoring games do. Fact. So when we look at some of these totals and say, yeah, they look historically high, well, we've got the best teams in the NFL, the teams that had the best regular season record, the favorites to go to the Super Bowl. They all can't play a lick of defense. It's not a defense-first league. That doesn't mean that a defensive-minded team like San Francisco has no chance in the postseason. But it also means that in these matchups of offense versus offense, it's going to take a higher total than 59 to get me to go under.
So a lot of food for thought coming up in the NFL. Like Teddy said, we'll get to the games, the Saturday games on Thursday, the Sunday games on Friday, tomorrow in our Insider Six-Pack. We're start breaking down a lot of key personnel situations, including a very intriguing one with Pittsburgh and Ryan Clark that's way off the radar screens right now. A lot to talk about. We'll start breaking down the NFL more in depth in tomorrow's Insider Six-Pack.
Yeah, we're looking to get caught up on the emails in tomorrow's show. So if you have a question, you want us to answer it on air, send us an email. Real easy, sportsday@covers.com. Compelling questions will be answered on air. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter, @VegasSportsDay. And you can get involved in the community. Active threads and discussions going right now. Covers.com/postingforum.
When we come back, well, we could fill an entire hospital ward of postmortems. We're going to get right to the very key ones in the next segment. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
This is David Ivey from Pub Crawl. It's funny because this is David from. You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get those surgical gowns on. It's time for the postmortem, where we take you deep inside the game to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
I said it on Friday, Dave, and I said it again today. We're not going to talk about the Washington-Baylor game, right?
But of course we are. What a couple of days it's been for those little plot twists on the Shakespearean stage that we call sport. As we've mentioned several times, the difference between huge amounts of money changing hands, between changes in power ratings and fortunes of coaches, so many times come down to just a single bounce of the ball. Bounces that don't necessarily have to happen. Bounces that go outside the ordinary realm of sport. Well, if you only take the box scores and the final scores and run with them, you're going to do just well enough to lose over time. You're going to get ground out because that's what so much of the marketplace does. So what we want to be able to do is take the stage and look inside the intricacies that someone like Shakespeare could show us so well and find those little nuances, those little bounces of the ball where we can see that too much happened out of too little. So once again, the play's the thing.
Oh, man. You got a 10-point underdog leading by 18 in the second half. You probably have a good bet. You have a 10-point dog leading outright at any time in the fourth quarter. You probably have a good bet. And even when your 10-point dog is down by 4, less than 3 minutes remaining, you should have little to fear. The team with the lead only wants to run the clock out. They don't want to score anymore. And that's what we thought when Baylor got the ball and what they would be doing on Thursday night. But Terrence Gannaway broke one of those clock-killing runs for a 43-yard touchdown scamper with less than 2.5 minutes on the clock left in that ballgame. It was a 2nd-and-3 play. Had Gannaway gotten the first down and been tackled, Baylor would have been taking a knee every play thereafter to run out the clock. But instead, he escaped, he ran into the end zone, and Washington backers were left with a bit of a hangover following that contest. You take the defeat and move on. It can and does happen, but you figure, oh, once every decade or so, maybe even twice a decade, you lose a game like this. Not very often.
How about twice in 24 hours to lose a game the exact same way? Bob Seger was terrific Friday night. Great show. Teddy, Kara, myself, and another friend were there to watch. And as we got close to encore time, Oklahoma and Iowa, nice play of the day on this show, similar to Baylor, was winding down. Of course, you pay no attention to the scores during the concert, but when there's this pause, when you know they're coming back out for an encore, you think, okay, let's check the score on the phone. So you watch a couple of plays on your BlackBerry, and you see the sequence. Oklahoma, 4th-and-1 at the Iowa 21-yard line, 45 seconds left in the game. And you think to yourself, okay, you get the first down, there's not another play to be run. Game over. Or even if there's a stop on 4th-and-1, you sweat out a couple Iowa pick six pass attempts, but you're in a pretty good position. Now, those of you who've been following this stuff for most of your lives know there's these little haunting things that can happen in sport, and this is one of the great ones. You're seeing the play-by-play on your phone, and you see 24-14, 4th-and-1. So the screen refreshes, and what do you see next at the very top? 31-14. Just a very, very chilling moment, because the play that Oklahoma ran went in for a touchdown. Blake Bell carried it all the way. If he's tackled anywhere on the field of play, the game's over at that point. So imagine having a 14-point underdog that leads the opponent in first downs and total yards, which means that you're about a coin toss to win the game outright, much less cover, or a 14-point dog that holds the favorite to less than 300 yards of total offense. If you see that happen, you figure you're on your way to a higher income bracket. You know, your taxes are going to be a little more expensive. But no, you don't win it, because for the second time in 24 hours, you have a team score on the last offensive snap they were going to try to score on in the game, and a type of play where historically, 99% of the time, maybe even more than that, they don't score. So what do? You take it and you move on. That's the nature of the sport. You need to make your adjustments properly and stay calm. But guess what? Just because football's over now or winding down, there's a whole winter of these little subtleties for basketball as well. And we could go to one in Rupp Arena on Saturday where the final score didn't necessarily tell the real tale of a basketball game.
No question about that one, Dave. If you were watching the show last week, it would have been no surprise that Louisville went from 13-0 to 13-2 with a pair of losses. We noted in Money Time segments that the Cards were overrated off a soft schedule and had personnel issues galore. But they could remain an overvalued commodity because Saturday's loss at Kentucky looked a lot closer on the final scoreboard than it actually was. Kentucky's up 67-54 with 15 seconds left on the clock. The Wildcats back off and allowed Russ Smith to drive for a layup, 67-56. Well, Rick Pitino decides, I'm going to foul one more time. We're down 13. There's 13 seconds left. Clearly, we can come back from that. And they foul one more time. And we saw Kentucky hit both free throws. We've got a final score. We have a 69-56, 10 seconds left on the clock. Should be the final score of the game, right? Well, didn't work out that way. Russ Smith, who was on his way to a career-high 30-point effort, he hit a three, and not just a three, a wild off-the-backboard, off-the-rim type of three, then stole the ball again and hit another three. Another wild off-the-backboard three. 2 3-pointers in the final 10 seconds for the Louisville side of the equation. So what happens? It goes from 69-56, which was indicative of how the game was played, to a final score of 69-62. Point spread cover for Louisville. Louisville gets the money. Louisville moves up in the power rankings. Kentucky moves down a notch in the power rankings. Off a couple of banked prayers. I mean, we're not talking about anything that was real that happened in that ballgame. We're talking about a guy who hit a couple of shots in the last 10 seconds when he wasn't being contested. So we have these adjustments. We have a Kentucky defense that was phenomenal throughout the game, has phenomenal all year. They get a little bit of a downgrade because of the points they allowed late. You have a Louisville team that may be still a little bit overvalued, maybe becoming a little bit more overvalued because they become a little bit overrated by that final score. And, yeah, Russ Smith got his 30 points. Louisville scored 62. The rest of the team around him, still very much a work in progress.
Coming up next, the news you need to know on tonight's basketball board in our Insider Six-Pack. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Hey, I'm Al Mann. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
All right, guys, let's pop the top on the first Insider Six-Pack of 2012.
If that's for Scott, that better be a diet.
A diet?
Yeah, he's on a program.
Oh, yeah. Again, he says, 30 pounds by April 15th?
Yeah.
I'm taking the under.
Well, let's put it this way. The IRS could take your pounds away by April. I had wondered about his timing of that, you know? So, yeah, diet.
Yeah, all right. Fine. Drink Miller Lite all day. I don't care what you want to drink. Bottom line is, let's start talking about DeMarcus Cousins, who is an extraordinary talent. No question, the number 5 overall pick coming out of Kentucky. a kid who was considered a quote-unquote head case, even in high school, when he got into a brawl on a team bus with a faculty member. At Kentucky, he was considered to be something of a mercurial guy. And certainly his tenure in Sacramento has been nothing short of, what's the appropriate word here? Disjointed? Stilted? Problematic? Well, DeMarcus Cousins is a star waiting to happen. But this is what we know about his status for tonight. He was suspended for the Kings' last game. He boarded the plane, however, to go to Memphis tonight, and he is with the Kings on their on the team plane. Instead of dressing for Sunday's game against New Orleans, Cousins was sent home. The Kings followed with their best performance of the year. But here's a quote from head coach Paul Westphal. When a player continually, aggressively lets it be known that he is unwilling slash unable to embrace traveling in the same direction as his team, it cannot be ignored indefinitely. It's going to be awkward watching any team deal with DeMarcus Cousins, a player with tremendous upside, but again, he has been something of a head case so far. He may be nowhere near ready to play in the NBA from a maturity standpoint, and yet the betting markets expecting him to play tonight. We've seen this number come from an opener of Memphis -8.5, currently sitting with Sacramento +7, even down to 6.5 in some key locations.
If Cousins does take the court tonight, it's a little bit easier for him. There are problems on the other side of the equation. Zach Randolph won't play for Memphis tonight, may sit out a couple of games. He's got a bone bruise in his right knee. There's a big drop-off from Randolph to Dante Cunningham, who has to step in as the starter. Nowhere near the same caliber of player or same style of player. Also, point guard Mike Conley. He's going to sit out at least one more game with a bad ankle, maybe going to miss tomorrow night as well. Jeremy Pargo stepped in for Conley and had a decent game in his first outing last week. And then look what happened in Chicago on Sunday. A 40-point drubbing for Memphis, which they only scored 64 points. Pargo, 2-for-13 from the field, only one assist. That's not very good point guard play. So possibly people betting as much against the Grizzlies as they are betting on the Kings.
Note that when UConn travels to Seton Hall tonight, it will be the final game of Jim Calhoun's three-game NCAA-mandated suspension to open the season. And that means to open the Big East season, I should say. That means George Blaney, once again, will be the head coach on the bench for the UConn Huskies this evening. It's been a rather fortunate draw for UConn without Calhoun. They were able to win at South Florida, an ugly grinder against a bottom-tier Big East team. And then at home versus a very depleted St. John's roster. But now they got to step up in class a little bit in a setting in which Calhoun's absence could legitimately be a factor. And let's not forget, this is a UConn team that is extremely young. Two freshmen, two sophomores in the starting lineup. Much of their upper-class experience from last year's national championship team has moved on to greener pastures.
Couldn't have asked for a much tougher draw for Nebraska in their welcome Matt into Big Ten play, and play Wisconsin, Michigan State, and Ohio State, the three best teams in the conference to open. Not only that, opening it without two key cogs that are going to be out again tonight, Brian Diaz inside, Dylan Talley out on the perimeter. We'll talk about Talley in a minute. Nebraska so limited in those first two games, they only shoot 33.3% from the field, get out-rebounded by 17, never really in the hunt. Now on the road for the first time at Ohio State, still without those two key cogs. It's possible Talley may be out longer than we thought. Didn't know much about this type of injury at first. He's got a calcium deposit on his right thigh. That doesn't sound all that bad. But here's what we get from Doc Sadler, the Nebraska coach now, in quotes. Dylan's situation is going to be a deal for a year and a half. You can't do anything about it. You can't operate on it. The first time he gets hit, it will be back to the way it's in. So not only Talley out tonight, it's possible they may shut him down for the rest of the Big Ten season.
It's time to talk about something we've called courting advantages once again. When Kentucky plays their annual game at Freedom Hall in Louisville, I've been accustomed to giving them a full home court edge for that contest, even though it's not in Lexington, at Rupp Arena. But really, in recent years, we haven't seen Kentucky draw the same type of crowds. Back in December 2004, they played Indiana and drew over 20,000 to Freedom Hall. But The last seven games in this venue, and again, they play here once a year, they've only averaged about 13,000, a little over 13,000 fans per contest. That's great anywhere else, but disappointing in this state. And it almost read like Calipari was calling out the fans with this quote that he gave yesterday. Quote, "I would just tell our fans it's your chance to see us in person, get out there, and get to the game. People have to come to it and make it something they want us to do. It's hard to say, get us UCLA in there and we'll come. You know I can't. I know this. Little Rock at home is going to bring 24,000 fans."
Some unexpected good news out of Alabama as they head to Georgia Tech tonight. Ronald Steele back on the team again. Steele suffered a concussion against Kentucky in the Southeast Conference tournament back in March, the fourth concussion of his career, two as a high school football player, two with Alabama in basketball. But Steele has been given clearance to play. And don't be surprised if you actually see him on the court for some significant time. He's been working as like a co-assistant coach and also playing with the scout team in the Alabama practices. So he's kind of up to speed in terms of being in physical shape to play. Now there's going to be that little confidence issue. But good news for Alabama that I think will permeate through the squad. They really like Steele. The one guy we couldn't get a classification on today, Jamichael Thompson. He's their key cog inside, their best scorer, their leading rebounder. He hasn't missed the last two games with a shoulder injury. He's with the team, heading to Atlanta to play tonight. But they won't know until the pregame warm-ups if his shoulder's good enough. If he's even close to being an issue, they'll sit him out one more time to try to get him fully healthy for the SEC play starting next.
When we come back, it's time to go to the Tuesday night hardwoods as Money Time begins.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys, it's money time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need to know in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start in Oklahoma City, where the Portland Trailblazers and the Oklahoma City Thunder face off tonight. Right now, the Thunder, about a -4.5-point chalk on their home floor. Both teams coming off their first loss of the young season. OKC falling yesterday to Dallas. Portland falling on the first game of this road trip at the Clippers on Sunday. But that's their only defeat for either squad so far this season. Who's got the edge tonight, Dave? And which of these two teams is the better squad overall?
Got the same question that we've asked on this show a couple of times last week already about Russell Westbrook at Oklahoma City. And that there was a big question coming into the season. Where was his confidence and his psyche going to be after some playoff failures against Dallas last year? If you remember back, they were eliminated from that series in consecutive games in which they had fourth quarter leads. The offense broke down late. They questioned Westbrook's decision making. He needed to calm down a little bit, be more of a distributor, create for the other players, not carry too much on his shoulders. Well, what have we seen so far this year? The same stuff. Westbrook only shooting 38% from the field. And a week and a half into the season, he has as many turnovers as assists. That is a terrible ratio for an NBA point guard. Not only has it impacted them offensively, but when you look at this Oklahoma City chemistry, we thought this could have been the best defensive team in the NBA. They've got lockup guys at several key positions, the best reserve group of defenders, we think, of any team. Yet when we look up number 17 in total defense so far, that's awful for where this team should be. Could it be that Westbrook's struggles on one end are impacting the entire team at the other end?
And we're seeing this total get bet down. An opener of a 198 is now in the 195 range, despite Oklahoma City's defensive issues and despite the fact that this Blazers team has changed pace completely in the Ray Felton era at point guard. Of course, Felton brought into the offseason to play point for Nate McMillan's squad. And lo and behold, a team that was dead last, number 30, in pace ratings a year ago, is sitting at number 4 right now. In fact, it was two straight years for Portland. They were dead last in the NBA. They're the fourth fastest team in the NBA right now. So a little bit surprised by the money that's come in on the under. This Blazers squad, we talked about some of the issues with OKC. This Portland squad, their front eight's as good as any in basketball. Portland's biggest issue likely to come in terms of depth, particularly in the low post, where they're relying an awful lot on Marcus Camby and Kurt Thomas, two aging veterans who may have a bit of problems with Kendrick Perkins and Serge Ibaka if the Thunder bring their A game tonight.
Let's go to Chicago. We've got a playoff rematch from last year. Chicago eliminated Atlanta in 6 games. First clash of this season, Chicago, a 9.5-point favorite. What a dynamite fourth quarter from Atlanta on the road at Miami last night. Entered the quarter trailing, outscored the Heat 33-21, something that we're not sure anyone else is going to do against the Heat all season on that court. And yeah, if you were watching in the background on SportsCenter, that was Tracy McGrady, of all people, knocking down that dagger of a three-pointer with a little over a minute left to secure the win for Atlanta. Look at McGrady's night, 16 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists in 25 minutes. Is there a fountain of youth bringing back into play? If so, that fear that Atlanta losing Jamal Crawford didn't have that score off the bench, that sort of goes away a little bit. The Hawks were able to match up pretty well against the Bulls in the playoffs last year defensively. Their difficulty was scoring. Could having McGrady off the bench maybe alleviate that a little bit?
Maybe. I mean, the Bulls are playing some pretty good defense right now, and Chicago is certainly going to be the fresher of these two teams today. As you mentioned, Atlanta yesterday going up against Miami, and in the midst of this brutal scheduling cycle, as tough as any team's going to face all year, where they have the Heat twice and the Bulls twice in a 5-game span. So Atlanta not going to have fresh legs this evening, and we've seen a lot of veteran teams like the Hawks struggle on the second night of these back-to-backs. Meanwhile, the Bulls were off yesterday. Prior to that, they had that aforementioned 40-point blowout win over Memphis, a game that was over, about midway through the second quarter, maybe earlier than that. And they had a day off before that as well. So Chicago certainly more rested than Atlanta, but the Hawks gave this team fits in the Eastern Conference semifinals last year. They're certainly going to be confident off that win in Miami tonight if they can solve the energy issues, which is a big if. But if they can, they might catch Chicago, coming off that 40-point blowout win, looking a little bit lethargic in comparison to the energy that Atlanta could bring to the table. Again, if they bring it.
So here's what we follow over the rest of the day. We're not sure if Rip Hamilton is going to play for the Bulls. He was out on Sunday. Chance for maybe rest him because they don't play again tomorrow. I think Tom Thibodeau, over the course of this year, is going to do what several of the top-notch coaches or coaches of the top-notch teams will do. He knows his team is going to be in the playoffs, so you want to manage the minutes carefully. If we get word that Hamilton's not going to play, maybe a first-half wager to Atlanta tonight. They're playing well enough to get a job done. They can scout the Bulls well enough, that experience from having been against them in the playoff series, to get the job done. But why first half instead of the full game? There's that notion that if you fall behind tonight on the road, instead of chasing, you might save the energy for a home game against the Bulls coming up in a couple of days. I'm not sure they'll be in the chaser role well enough tonight for us to trust. If we do play, it'll be the first half.
Let's go to Madison, Wisconsin, where the Badgers, -6 at home against Michigan State, Dave. And this is a stat. I saw it the first time. I didn't believe it. I had to double check it. It's true. How about this? Tom Izzo in Madison. Tom Izzo, who's been a head coach like few others in terms of getting his team to overachieve, getting his team to win in hostile environments, all that sort of thing. Izzo versus Bo Ryan head-to-head in Madison. How about 0-8 straight up for the Michigan State Spartans? And the last two times Izzo's teams have gone up to Madison, it hasn't even been close. We're talking ugly losses, 67-49, 82-56. Spartans non-competitive in defeat against this Bo Ryan coach team.
But Madison's a different place this year. Marquette already came in and won by 7 points. A win at the time made us elevate Marquette, and now subsequently we see that Marquette's good. They're not great. They were not supposed to be elevated because Iowa, of all teams, also went in and won by 7 at Madison. And if you followed Iowa on the Big Ten road the last couple of years, you know how awful the Hawkeyes have traveled. So it's not as intimidating of an environment. And we think, okay, what's wrong with this particular Ryan team? There's one thing that does stand out. Jordan Taylor, point guard, legitimate All-American candidate. But Ryan relies so much on upperclassmen, especially in the front court, where they've got that toughness to hit the boards. They can run the sophisticated defensive schemes that he has, also run that swing offense properly. This year, you don't have a single senior in his prime front court rotation. That looks like that may be the weakness for Wisconsin. And if your weakness is up front, even at home, you don't want Michigan State being the team you have to go up against. The Sparty Spartans are tough on the boards.
Yeah, they certainly are. And again, another staple of Tom Izzo coach teams, Michigan State year in, year out, they're in the top 10 nationally in rebounding margin. That is the case once again in 2012, where Izzo Spartans are plus 10.5 boards per game. And we're talking about a Michigan State team. Remember, they started out 0-2. They faced North Carolina on an aircraft carrier off of San Diego. They went to Madison Square Garden and faced Duke. And so coast to coast, they lost since that time 13 consecutive victories. That includes a road win at Gonzaga, a win that looks even better after the Zags knocked off Xavier on the road this past weekend. And, of course, a win at Nebraska. Dave talked about some of the issues that Nebraska had, but the bottom line is Michigan State dominated in that venue. They won by 13, a wire-to-wire point spread cover. That's what Michigan State's capable of doing in a hostile environment.
When we come back, New Orleans is going to be the football capital of the world over the next week, starting with tonight's Sugar Bowl. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
I'm Courtney Leone. This is Vegas Video Network. You want me to mention awkward silence? Let's do that then. Okay. Never been on set here before. I'm always out live on location for Awkward Silence 2.1. I'm Courtney Leone, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. Good, better.
Let's go to the Superdome in the Superdome. The Superdome. Oh, I love doing live TV. Superdome. In New Orleans, where, as Dave said, that's the center of the sports betting universe, the center of the football universe, at least for the next week or so, we have Michigan. I know the graphic says Virginia Tech -3. The reality is that Michigan is -3, total of 51. Yeah, Malinsky's going to have to do push-ups for the bad graphic. But in the meantime, let's discuss the game, Dave. And certainly, okay, both these teams probably didn't deserve to be here. They both came because they were going to bring fan support. And again, the BCS Bowls and all of these bowls are designed not for good matchups. They're designed to make money for their hosts and the TV networks that, that choose to air them or pay to air them. But the bottom line is Michigan's here. Well, let's see. The Big Ten has stunk it up once again during bowl season. And Michigan, they didn't even do anything this year. You look at what happened in their two toughest road tests. They went to Michigan State and lost by double digits. They went to Iowa and lost by double digits. How good are these Wolverines? Are they better than Virginia Tech?
I don't think so. So it's a case where they may have put the cart ahead of the horse twice in this setting. First, in putting Michigan here, because Michigan State, from their own conference, as Teddy said, had beaten them, deserved the bid more. Boise State certainly deserved it more. So one is they don't belong here. Second is, even though they are here, are they supposed to be favored? The Michigan seniors will be two bowls in 4 years. The only other bowl, Mississippi State in the Gator Bowl last year, they got destroyed. It's a team with not a lot of experience at preparing for a big game like this, and the first year under a new coaching staff. Virginia Tech, well, their fifth-year seniors are in their fourth BCS game in 5 years. Frank Beamer and his staff, they've been through a lot of these in the past. And there are some technical aspects of this coaching matchup we think works. Denard Robertson has an awful lot of speed. And that works in the Big Ten, as we've seen in the bowls once again, a slow conference. But now Robinson's speed isn't that much of a factor because Virginia Tech not only has the quickness on defense to contain him, but they'll know how. If you have a history of running quarterbacks in your own program, including guys like Michael Vick, you certainly know how to isolate against the quarterback that does more with his legs than with his arm. Remember, with his arm, Robinson's still a below-average passer. So we get a little value to Virginia Tech, a little more bowl experience, and maybe even a technical matchup we can use.
Yeah, but see, the ACC hasn't gotten as much publicity as the Big Ten, but they haven't been good in bowls either. Not this year, not last year, not in any recent season. But what happens is that the Big Ten plays all these games on New Year's Day, and the media, the Big Ten stinks, the Big Ten stinks. ACC hasn't been any good either. You look at the ACC team, let's see. Well, we saw Virginia, who was playing for a chance to play for the ACC title against his Virginia Tech team. They got waxed by Auburn. We saw North Carolina go down. We saw Georgia Tech go down. We saw Wake Forest go down. So certainly the ACC hasn't exactly been lighting it up when it comes to bowl results. And again, this is nothing new. Just the Big Ten's gotten more publicity for their bowl failures because the Big Ten seems to lose to the SEC, whereas the ACC tends to lose to everybody. People have called. I read one article. They were saying, oh, Denard Robinson and Logan Thomas, yeah, they're the same type of quarterback. It couldn't be more different. You know, Robinson is a running back with a gun of an arm, and he's more like a scat back. He's light. That's why we saw Michigan's offense designed to have him run less this year so he wouldn't take as many hits. Logan Thomas, this guy's a beast. He's 250 pounds. He's Dante Culpepper or Ben Roethlisberger out there. He can take a hit. He can take two hits and shake them off. And I think he's got more of an NFL arm when it comes to the long-term projections than Denard Robinson does. This year, Virginia Tech didn't have a lot of playmakers on the outside. Their passing game wasn't explosive, but it has that potential when we look long-term. And, of course, again, when you got a 250-pound quarterback who can shake off blitzers like it's nothing, you know, that certainly bodes well, perhaps, for the Hokies' chances.
And we'll put some of those chances in our pockets. Virginia Tech plus +3, get you some investment tonight. There's a place we can go for even a little bit more. Let's go to the college hardwoods. Teddy mentioned in the Insider Six-Pack, this will be the last game of Jim Calhoun's suspension for Connecticut. A young team with two sophomores and two freshmen starting is going to miss that leadership. They've only had one true road game. They sputtered, they wheezed to beat South Florida. On neutral courts, they lost to Central Florida, had to go to overtime to escape against Florida State. Let's remember that this team that won the national championship last year played 500 ball in the Big East regular season. This was a team that got hot late, not a championship team. Kemba Walker led that run. He's not around anymore. So let's look to Seton Hall, plus +3 against Connecticut. As the Vegas sports they play of the day, two key seniors for the Hall, Herb Pope inside, Jordan Theodore out on the perimeter, who also play the two key positions on the court. They're the veterans that take control of this game late against a Connecticut team that's far from where they were in early April last year.
Seton Hall plus the points, that's the play of the day. And that's going to wrap it up for the Tuesday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll be back in 23 hours and, about 15 minutes.